No one can cross from there to us. If they do not listen to Moses and the prophets, neither will they be convinced, even if someone rises from the dead. Between you and us, a great chasm has been fixed. These are painful words woven through our gospel today. Words of permanence, of lost hope. Sometimes there can be a great chasm between where we are and where we want to be. When we're looking out toward how we might want to change, it can sometimes seem like there is no way for us to cross from here to there. There are countless ways this can take shape. Yearning to be in a loving community or trying to gather the courage to leave a hurtful one. Contemplating moving toward a new vocation, but not being sure how to start or if we can stomach the risk. Or, like the rich man today, it might be the experience of being consumed by all that we consume, stuck in that cycle of always wanting more. I'm guessing maybe you've felt this chasm at some point in your life, in one form or another. For me, it emerged about a decade ago when I was living deep in grief. And connected with that, I was struggling with how I was using alcohol to cope. It was not how I wanted to live. And I was hurting, and I was scared. For a while, it was hard to imagine what another way might look like. And then when I did begin to catch glimpses of what could be, it felt like there was this massive divide between where I was and where that hope existed. I did not know how to cross that chasm or how I might begin. We begin not with a clear map forward, though, but with story. That's where Jesus begins so much of the time. And there are layers and layers of storytelling at work here today. The rich man and Lazarus and Abraham are living out a story. And the rich man is hoping that another story will be sent to his brothers that they might change their ways. Jesus is telling this combination of stories to a growing crowd made up of his disciples and also tax collectors and sinners and Pharisees. And all these years later, we are inheritors of these nesting stories. Stories of all these people grappling with how to live, how to come close to God, and maybe how to change. Jesus is not recounting a literal, factual episode in history, though. Once again, it's a parable. One of those mysterious, quirky tales designed to challenge our thinking. Last week, the parable was hard because it seemed to make no sense. But this week, is hard because it seems frighteningly clear. Here is a rich man. He is a selfish jerk, and now he's going to rot in hell for all time. Right? That's the take-home message? That is certainly how this has been used. But parables aren't tidy morality tales, even if they sound like they could fit right in with Aesop's fables. I have been sitting with this parable, chewing on it with colleagues, puzzling over it for weeks. It has challenged me every time I have come to it over the years. I believe in natural consequences. Sometimes I think our actions absolutely can land us in a kind of living hell. But I can't make sense of a loving God who would not welcome people reaching out for God. I believe the God of love, the God who is love, will always, always embrace those who are ready to return, even if it takes us a long time to get there. And that's what haunts me with this story. It sounds like this is it. The rich man is toast, case closed, too bad. And yet, what I've gleaned from the rest of Jesus' teaching and actions is that even when we seem to be really far gone, we are never lost to God. Jesus tracks down the wayward sheep. He wraps the prodigal son in his arms. When the rest of the world throws someone away as a lost cause, Jesus shares a meal with them, heals them, explicitly honors their dignity. He sets people back on their feet and centers them in the midst of community over and over again. So why is he telling this story? As I pondered and wrestled and pushed back against it all, a couple of biblical scholars offered a possibility this week that threw open the gates of my mind. Yes, Jesus is almost certainly serious here in his warnings about the dangers of wealth. He talks about money all the time, more than just about anything else. But what if he's also egging on the folks listening, challenging them to figure out a way across the chasm? If your brothers do not listen to Moses and the prophets, Jesus has Abraham call down to the rich man. Neither will they be convinced, even if someone rises from the dead. Even if someone rises from the dead. Wink, wink. He's already told the disciples that he will be killed and that he will rise again. What if Jesus is leaving them breadcrumbs here, hinting at what is to come, and in the same breath, naming with compassion how hard it is for folks to change their lives? Remember, he's telling a story. And this storytelling is nested inside the even larger story that is the gospel. Taken as part of the whole, this begins to sound less like fear-mongering and more like masterful foreshadowing, and also a reminder of the miracles they have already seen. Resurrection is coming, which is stunning and mysterious. It is a thing of awe. Healing and liberation are already underway. Those following him have seen these gifts transpire in ways they could not have imagined back when they were fishing or shaking down their neighbors for unjust taxes. And even with all that's been and all that is to come, it is hard to change. Jesus is issuing them a challenge here, trying to inspire and compel them to go after it anyways. Sometimes we get to see resurrection in real time in those around us. And sometimes we even get to see it in ourselves. Those glimpses began to accumulate for me. A friend sharing the details of his story of letting go of alcohol and how much grace he found there. People standing up in the middle of the service and sharing that they were celebrating 10 years, 20, once in a while, many decades of sobriety, and they were radiant. They weren't just surviving or making do, I saw, they were thriving. And just like Jesus does many times before and after today's gospel, these folks showed what it was like to find healing and freedom and grace and what it was to bridge the chasm together. In their witness, I found the trail of clues that Jesus seems to be offering today, beckoning us forward, challenging us to step into the change we are so hungry for, even if it's terrifying, even when it still feels out of reach. It's been 8, almost 9 years sober for me now, and I am overwhelmed with delight and gratitude for just how good life is on this side. There was a time when I couldn't see across the chasm. And there was also a time when I could see the other side, but I could not imagine the way across the chasm. Not even if a man rose from the dead. But this God of ours is persistent and generous and keeps returning for us. And all I can say is thank you. Her hands are full of breadcrumbs to lead us. Stories are spilling out of her mouth that give us glimpses of the healing and grace and freedom that she brings. Her heart is spacious enough to hold all that we've been and then help us find a way forward into the change we long to live. Yes, we hurt others, we get hurt ourselves. Yes, the chasm between us and abundant life can sometimes feel awfully deep and wide. And that wasn't the end of the story back then. And it isn't the end of the story now. Here is our God who raises the dead. Here is our God who makes all things new. Here with us now is our God whose hand is outstretched, inviting us into the fullness of life.